The views and comments expressed on the Space Show by its guests, callers, and listeners belong to them. The Space Show and its hosts serve only as a platform and are not responsible for others' comments or views. All topics discussed on the Space Show are primarily for educational purposes.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
We have main engine start. 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the Space Show with Dr. David Livingston, broadcasting to 7 continents, consistently bringing you quality news and interviews with the best and brightest minds in the new space economy. Here is the founder and host of the Space Show, the man who best articulates the vision of space commercial enterprise, Dr. David Livingston.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Tuesday night on the Space Show. It is Bob Zimmerman night, meaning he is our guest tonight. And he will come on talking in just a minute. A couple of very quick announcements. If you want to talk to Bob, and hopefully you do, it is 1-866-687-7223. If you prefer email, it is drspace, D-R-S-P-A-C-E, at thespaceshow.com. Or you can use our blog, which is thespaceshow.com, all the way over to the far right, upcoming show menu, and then click on the first show. It is the Zimmerman Show. And then comments are down at the bottom. You do not have to be logged in to discuss, that is our comment program, to make a comment. However, discuss has this nasty habit of making comments disappear that were not made by being logged in either to discuss or through one of their social media allies. And I have no preference that I can set on that. So this is discuss only, not me. So if you make a comment and then you go back to the blog later on and it's disappeared and you did not log in, email me and I can go retrieve it and put it back up. But the reason it disappeared is because discuss randomly cans comments unless you are logged in, which is not very nice of them. But anyway, Bob is our guest. A couple of other things to point out on thespaceshow.com while Bob is typing away and we can hear what he's typing. Read our newsletter because it has all the details for this week. But more important, we have been adding lots of shows to our schedule. So it is filling out for the rest of the summer. And we're going in, well, the dates are all set through the end of the year. So you'll start seeing the rest of October, November, and December filling up. And, Bob, if you want to get on for the end of the show, end of the year, let me know because all those dates are now available. Everything we do is archived, and you can listen off of our website or easily and quickly download the shows. Check out our store. It's in the upper menu under support, and you'll see it there if you want to get Space Show logo wear. Also, Listen Live tells you and everyone else how to listen to a live show as well as an archive show. Please share that information with people. Over on the far right is Support the Space Show. That's in the center of the page. Remember, we're a nonprofit 501c3 with one, onegiantleapfoundation.org. And because many of you do financially contribute to the Space Show as a tax-free organization, we're able to bring you all of our content free of charge and to do all of these shows. Without it, we would probably hang it up and I would go into retirement. So we thank you for your support. Remember, if you're paying federal taxes, you do get a tax deduction for your gift. The same is true if you're fortunate enough to be paying California taxes. Actually, in California, we're known as a public benefit corporation. And so check us out in the parent website, onegiantleapfoundation.org, has additional information. Email me, drspace@thespaceshow.com, if you have questions. In addition to the individual support I just talked about, in which we absolutely need and we're very appreciative of, we have corporate sponsors. Their banner ads are going across our website. They rotate. Check out the messages behind the banner ads from time to time. And I also read sponsor messages to support the show. So coming into the first segment of the show, the Integrated Space Plan sponsors us. They are a detailed 100-year forecast of our future in space. You all have heard this many times before, too. The plan includes Earth-to-orbit reusable in-space transportation. It also shows the development of the Moon and Mars, followed by a base in the asteroid belt and space settlements. And you can see it all at thespaceplan.com. And Space Plan, guys, you'll have to add the Mars Anthem, which is now going viral on the Internet, to your Space Plan for fueling Mars visits. If you visit the plan online, you can click on any of their 500 elements. They're all interactive, and they open up to a lot more information. But if you buy the full-size Space Plan poster, it is not interactive, but it is way cool. I put it on the door to my radio studio in my home. I look at it all the time while I'm doing the show, and you'll be really happy with it. They also have a new version of it, and they have a kids' Space Plan, which might interest you for your children. And again, it's all at thespaceplan.com. And then the Space Foundation, they are up to their 34th symposium, August 16th through the 19th, Colorado Springs, Colorado, at the Broadmoor. Their website, spacesymposium.org. Check it out. If there's any way you can do it, plan on attending. It is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Lots of new people, new faces. It is not like an advocate conference at all. And you need to experience it at least once, and I think then you'll be addicted to it. And Bob Zimmerman is our guest tonight, and you can read his bio on the website, but he has a very, very good website of his own, Behind the Black. And it's not limited to space news, but it's very good for space news. But he has science news and other news and items that will interest you. And I really urge you to check out Behind the Black. He is a noted author. We've talked with him before on all of his books. And, you know, he needs to write a new one. Bob, have you ever thought about writing a new one? Are you working on one?
Oh, well, I mean, the Capitalism Space policy paper was a major work that I did last year. Other books are always in the works. But, you know, I got to get someone to say yes to publishing them, and publishers don't like me.
Why don't they like me
because I won't let them rewrite my opinions to fit their personal taste. They work with me once, and when they realize I'm going to express my opinions with my name on it, they suddenly don't want to work with me anymore. It's very frustrating.
Have you ever thought of self-publishing a book?
Oh, yes. I've done it already with at least two books. I mean, Genesis is now self-published, you know, internet basically. It's an ebook and selling very well. Actually, I'm very pleased at that. And I did a, 4 years ago, actually, when we moved out to Arizona, since my wife and I were doing all these wonderful hikes, I decided, well, you know, why don't I put it together to make a guidebook? And so just to test the waters for self-publishing. So I put together a book called Circuit Hikes of Southern Arizona, a little guidebook, which sells, has been selling very, very well here in the Southwest, here in Arizona, because it covers all the basic hikes people want to do, that weren't covered in other books. And so I did that. That was the easiest book I've ever written because I basically was doing the hikes and I just simply spent an hour, not even, like 15 minutes after each hike, writing down what happened and put it together in a book and got it published. So, yeah, self-publishing has occurred to me very much so. We'll see what happens. There are things in the works. There always are.
Well, maybe I know you're still fairly young. You can do a hiking trails on the Moon or Mars one day.
Oh, I'm hoping to. Yeah.
You know, that ought to be a lot of fun. SpaceX has been active as can be since the last time you were on the show. They've had numerous successful launches. What else is going on?
Well, let me just say quickly, you mentioned SpaceX. At this moment in time, they've completed 10 launches in the first half of the year. That puts them in the lead of anyone else anywhere, any other nation in the world. They can't be ahead of the U.S. since they're part of the U.S., but no other U.S. company is even close, and no other nation or other company is even close to the number of launches. So they've basically began to get their launch rate up, get the cadence they've been trying to get for the last 2 years. Their hope, I'm sure, is to double that number by the end of the year, which would give them as many launches as what the U.S. and China had last year about. And so they're definitely on the way. They've reused first stages a second time. They've rec- recovered more first stages. They've reused the Dragon capsule up and down from ISS successfully. They're planning and building towards that first Falcon Heavy launch. It looks pretty solid now that it's going to happen before the end of this year, should everything go right. They just simply have to get the damaged launch pad operating again, and they expect that to happen by August, and then it'll take about 60 days to get the Falcon Heavy launch pad ready, and then they're going to go with that first launch. And Gwynne Shotwell, she did this, I think she said this on your show, David, if I remember my sources right, that she they plan to have at least three launches of the Falcon Heavy by the end of next year.
Yeah, she did.
And that got some press, and I don't see any reason why that can't happen, to be very honest. You know, the key to that launch will be the core stage, because that's been major redesigned. The outer stages of the first stage are reused first stages, and those have been tested pretty well. But the core stage had to be major redesigned, so that's going to be the big question mark when they do the launch. But if it works, they'll proceed. And if they do three launches, the Air Force has said that would be enough for them to consider certifying the Falcon Heavy. And if they do that, then suddenly ULA is in really big trouble, because SpaceX can then pretty much outbid them on any bid the Air Force puts forth. Now, the Air Force won't just pick SpaceX. They want to have multiple companies,
obviously. One of the things that I thought was really impressive was their coast-to-coast really impressive launch on one weekend where they did the Cape and then they went out to Vandenberg. Maybe it was Vandenberg and then back to the Cape. But very impressive to be able to do that.
Yes, and that just demonstrates they have two independent launch teams now capable of doing this kind of stuff. You know, by September, they will have two launch pads ready to work at Kennedy. And that will mean they'll have three places they can launch from. Then they have the Brownsville launch site, which isn't ready to launch, but give it a few more years, that'll give them four launch sites. And if they have enough business, they could be launching on a very regular cadence almost continuously. And they're just demonstrating how it should be done. You know, there's no silliness here. They don't waste time. You know, one of the things I was thinking about is when the shuttles failed both times, it was years before we got back into orbit. With SpaceX, they have shrunk the downtime from 6 months the first time to, I think it was 6 months, maybe a little longer than that, but then they shrunk it down to about 3 months. And that's not unreasonable in a real situation. That's how you should function. You should figure it out, find out what's going wrong. Don't spend a lot of time trying to get everybody to sign on. Just make sure you know what was wrong and fix it and go on. And that's what they're basically doing. It's very impressive.
Keep in mind that SpaceX accidents didn't kill anyone.
Yes, if they, unfortunately, let's pray they don't, but if they would have killed somebody, suddenly the federal government gets involved. And
Different scenario. Yeah, absolutely. There'll be more committees than there are hair left on my head.
Yeah, and it'll be a terrible waste of time because they won't really reveal. With this company, I don't think they would reveal anything that we don't know that they company wouldn't find out on its own, because the reason they're successful, SpaceX, is because they don't pussyfoot problems. They are very hard on fixing what is wrong, and that way you have success. And so if they saw something go wrong, they wouldn't fake it, they would fix it. And unfortunately, you get the government involved, it's going to be talk, and negotiations and a lot of politics, and it'll be a shame. These companies are moving forward, the business is changing, and it's a very, very good thing.
What is going on other than SpaceX, or is all the news SpaceX all the time?
Sometimes seems that way. What really is happening here is, you know, almost seven years ago, when Obama took presidency and he was canceling Constellation, actually it's almost a decade ago when the Bush administration first awarded the private contracts to SpaceX and to rocket plane Kistler, Eventually that became orbital ATK. I said at that time that we were facing a very long and difficult transition from private, from a government-run operation, which means everything is done by the government. The government builds the rockets and flies them and takes their time about it. We're all dependent on the government. We're going to be shifting into a private paradigm, which is the traditional way American companies worked, where the government buys the services from private companies that are competing with each other. And that transition now is about a decade old, and I think we are about in the next 2 to 3 years see the transition go to completion. And so SpaceX has been leading the way, but they're not alone in this. You've got Rocket Lab did their first test flight, and they were as successful, if not more so, than SpaceX's first launch with the Falcon 1. You've got a company called Vector, which is working hard to try to get themselves going. You've had Jim Cantrell, I think, on your show at some point. He's the CEO of that company. They've gotten finances. By the end of this year, you're going to have, hopefully, this is what at least the Google Luna XPRIZE requires, and you've got at least five teams saying they've got launch contracts and are ready to go. We'll have a privately funded and built lunar rover on the moon. Privately funded and built. Now, it might not happen this year. There's a lot of question marks with all of them, but I think by next year, Google will change the rules if they have to get a success. And so by next year, you'll see it happening. Several of those companies, even if they don't win the XPRIZE, they are pretty much using their existence and what they've been accomplishing to make them into private companies doing things. And so there will be results from that, even if that doesn't happen. So is it all SpaceX? No, it isn't. I mean, you got Blue Origin in the background here. It's interesting that they have not done any further tests of their suborbital reusable craft. They've instead going to put that craft, at least the test craft, they were going to send up a different one, but the test craft they used five times, it's on a museum tour right now. I read a story where it was going to be on display somewhere. But they haven't done any further tests on the suborbital, so that's one that I'm wondering about. What they have is they've moved forward on construction of their factories to build the engines and the rocket, the New Glenn orbital rocket. And since Jeff Bezos is selling off a small amount of his Amazon shares, he doesn't have to sell very many to get $1 billion a year in investment capital to build this space company. Having $1 billion a year, he has very deep pockets, far deeper than SpaceX ever had. So he's going to be a player in this, without question. Near future, it's going to get very exciting.
Well, he's busy buying a grocery store and appealing with others that own newspapers for special congressional legislation to bail out their newspapers.
Well, you know, he's a businessman in a whole wide range of things, but what I'm focusing on here is what he's doing with Blue Origin, and what he's doing elsewhere is giving him very deep pockets to push Blue Origin. And it does appear to me that the space component of his empire is the one that his heart lies. And so in the long run, that's where his money's going to go and his future will be. And that is for the future of the United States and world in terms of exploration of space. You know, it's not just old SpaceX and other reasons. The legal framework, I'm going to have an op-ed tomorrow in the Federalist on the subject of the recently approved, not passed, but approved by a House committee of their proposed legislation to reshape the regulatory framework of space. And some of that bill addresses the Outer Space Treaty. You've had Cruz having his series of hearings on this subject, and in fact he's going to have another one on Thursday, which I'll write about on Behind the Black once it happens. You've got the UK released its space policy. It's had a second reading now in the House of Lords. This is their space policy, new regulatory framework for encouraging private space in the UK. The United Arab Emirates has released its plan for the future. You got China aggressive. I could talk about China at great length. They've got lots going on. There are other countries as well that are interested in. Luxembourg is interested in this legal framework. So there's something, because of all the transition to private space and the competition it's bringing, and the profits it's bringing, you now have a realization that we've got to start to deal with the legal framework that doesn't encourage private space. And whether they're going to come to a good solution or not, I don't know right now, but they are very much beginning to address this question politically, and that's a major issue that's going to come down. That's going to be big politics in the next decade or so. No question. You know, for years, you and I and others have talked about how the outer space treaty is a problem, and everyone kind of like glazes over, and they're not really interested. But what we've got now is we've got really powerful people in many countries who are very conscious of the problem and trying to figure out how to deal with it. And that's a change. That's very much a significant change.
Well, the Space Frontier Foundation is having a conference in Luxembourg in a couple of weeks.
Uh-huh.
That's new. When I was at their conference in San Francisco, the people from Portugal and the Azores were there, and the Azores are lobbying for their islands to be a massive commercial launch site for all of Europe and elsewhere. And it's actually not a bad location.
No, it isn't.
In the Atlantic, and I'm going to try to get their guys on the show. They speak perfect English, so that shouldn't be a problem. They're back in Portugal. New Zealand has their law that they're working on and doing in Australia. Right. So it is, you know, to take a word or phrase from the tech community, it's going viral.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'll give you another example. There was a story I posted on Behind the Black this week about how there's going to be the UN has this international conference, Congress every year, International Aerospace Conference.
Yeah, the COPUS, uh-huh.
And it's going to be in Australia. And in conjunction with that, they always do what they call the Space Generation Congress, which is a small side event. It's usually been, based on previous ones, in the range of maybe 100 at most, maybe 200 people at most. But it's focused on students and young entrepreneurs, young people involved, and students mostly involved. It's a UN event, so it's got a lot of the bureaucracy involved, and it's international, so it's, of course, it's very socialist in its tact. But nonetheless, that conference in Australia this September, the Space Generation Congress is going to have a working group of young Australians discussing what? The Outer Space Treaty, and having to face the fact that this treaty is no longer, is maybe getting out of date and needs to be dealt with. So you're right, it's going viral. People are paying attention to this. Obviously, there's a lot of people in the international community, and they're encouraging the students to be, you know, to follow their good intentions, and we mustn't have war in space.
What does that mean, good intentions?
Well, the road to hell is paved with good intentions.
Well, yeah, but
so what the good intentions are, things like, well, we don't want to have military in space. We don't want to have war. And we want everyone to own everything. We don't want to deny new nations their access to land. And so everything must be shared. That's the kind of good intentions that led to communism and also the Outer Space Treaty. So now whether this Congress will have any influence is very interesting in that direction. I like to point out that success breeds success, and young people pay attention to new things and success. So even these UN students, international students, influenced by that bureaucracy, they're influenced by all, as much if not more so, by things that SpaceX and Blue Origin are doing.
Okay,
and
so
that is a positive sign, and I think it's going to change the future.
Let me paint a different picture.
Sure, please do. I might learn something.
You learn something? Yeah, right. That means you have to let me talk and not go.
Now, there's no reason to be insulting, Dave.
Okay, so the new space conference was held in San Francisco, which was really kind of weird. And it was all panels. And here's the surprise. Most of the panel members were, I would say, if they're not in the millennial group, they're right on the cusp of it. And they are new space entrepreneurs that have started their own company that I've never heard of, never knew the companies existed, had no idea that they were pursuing this or that product. Now, none of this has to do with human spaceflight, so let's take that. Here's the thing. Probably, you know, I'm just thinking off the top of my head. I'm not making a hard, fast count. I would venture that half the people that were entrepreneurs were women, Asian, and Indian.
Yeah.
They were not the typical person you see at a space conference, which is a 60-year-old white guy. And it was a different world than anything I've come across before. And women were getting funding. These are young women. I'm talking about in their late 20s. They're getting seen and noticed by Silicon Valley funding and angel funding. They're walking away with tons of money and running companies. People from India that are in the Bay Area and in Silicon Valley, the same thing. They are flocking to Northern California and parts of Seattle, parts of Southern California, because this is a hotbed of all of this, and many of them are not from here. And so they are global, but they're not in the least bit representative of what you described as the UN people that will be meeting in Australia. They're more of the people that you talk about all the time and that I talk about all the time. I don't know which ones will succeed or fail or whatever, but it was like, God, this is what we've been talking about for 20 years, and now you've got these young people of every gender and Indian, as I said, Asian. I think there were a couple of blacks that were involved, black Americans. I mean, it was really a different world for this group.
You know, what you're saying only kind of confirms what I was theorizing might happen in Australia at this UN conference, which is that the influence of private enterprise will shape the discussion of the outer space treaty revisions. And what your experience there and things I've seen too kind of confirms that hopeful sign. I mean, you mentioned people from India. Well, you know, India is they switched from a socialist communist model in the late 1990s. And since they've done that, that country has discovered prosperity and a booming industry and economy, and it's resulted in a very successful space program as well that's also focused on market share and making money. And from that, and using private enterprise, by the way, and so from that, you've got a wealth of new entrepreneurs coming out of India, educated from a democracy that understands these basic Western British American principles. And so that doesn't surprise me that you saw Indians who were doing being entrepreneurs there. And it's very, very hopeful. I think that the focus, I tend to not focus on gender. I just focus on whether people from a lot of places are getting, coming up with ideas that are getting investment capital. And so obviously a lot of people from all walks of life and places are now getting these ideas and pushing these things. I saw another article, David, which confirms this as well, talking about how the generation after the millenniums, there is good survey data that suggests they're not going to follow the traditional assumed route of starting out as democratic, liberal, knee-jerk communists and then slowly learn a little bit. They already are starting from the beginning knowing that doesn't work, and they're coming at the politics and the world from a completely different perspective, which is what private space needs, because private space is not big government. It is private and individual achievement competing with each other privately under the veil of freedom, with the government only acting as providing the legal framework to make private enterprise work.
Okay, so let me make a couple of points here.
Yeah.
The people that I spoke to, and I didn't speak to all of them,
of course not.
They believe in saving the world. And space is saving the world. I don't know their politics. I didn't ask. I didn't care. But they're very much humanitarian oriented while also capitalistic and profit oriented. So my hunch is that, there's probably a lot of liberal ideas and humanitarian ideas that they like and embrace, and they're probably a complex mixture of both sides.
I agree with you.
Okay,
I mean,
now,
the good intentions, that's always the good intentions
and humanitarian that you have to worry about. Yeah, and Kumbaya was everywhere.
Yeah,
I mean,
sure.
It's in their blood. But listeners, if you want to get an idea of what I'm talking about, even though New Space 2017 is long over with now, their app is still available for you to download. And it has all of the speakers listed and their bios. And it has the panels and who chaired the panels and their content and their bios. So on the iPhone, it's NewSpace 17. It's a free download, and the app still works. I just tested it a minute ago. It was also available for the Android market, although I don't know how you download things from the Android market because I don't have that kind of phone. But again, it's NewSpace 17. But the interesting thing is it gives all of the participants' email addresses. I shouldn't say this. They'll probably be inundated over time with emails from people listening to the Space Show or picking this up. But you can contact all of these people based on what they were talking about in terms of a summary of what the programming isn't there, but you know, what their panel was about, what their expertise was about, what their company was about, and you can contact them. And you can see the mix and the entrepreneurship and the young person mixture that is just, I was floored by it. I did not expect it, and it was a welcome sight.
Yeah, it's helpful. It's very helpful. I mean, and once again, success breeds success. The more that competition and freedom and capitalism succeeds here, the more people will follow that trail. Now, granted, there is a very strong desire, and you know, the idealistic desire to avoid disaster and do evil is a good thing. It's just that one has to be very careful how you try to prevent it, because what too often happens is passing laws to prevent evil only ends up preventing good at the same time. You have to really be careful, and that's the only caveat that I say to this, that there's not been a lot of cautiousness from my generation, our generation, about such things. They just, let's pass a law, let's do it, it'll make things better without thinking. And if they can just be cautious and careful and allow their humanitarianism and idealism to work under a thoughtful regime, then we might really go in the right direction. And once again, as you say, it's going viral. There's a lot of interest in the legal future of space and how to make it really function. That's at least my thoughts on that. At least I think we've got some positive things going there. I'm hopeful. I'm very hopeful.
What is happening with ULA? You mentioned it a little while ago. Where is ULA in the news?
That's a good question. Tory Bruno has really done, I think, a bang-up good job of trying to change the culture of that company, cut its cost, and be competitive. And I think they're reasonably successful, at least at this moment in time, of becoming competitive with what they have on hand. The real question is whether or not that company can come up with a new rocket, the Vulcan rocket, in time, in a manner that will produce a price that's competitive. And I'm increasingly skeptical that's going to happen. You know, when Bruno announced the Vulcan rocket, what was it now, 2 years ago, a year ago, they said, we're not going to do a reusable first stage vertically landing like SpaceX. We don't think that's workable. We don't think the engines are going to be functional. And the engines are really what count. And so we're going to set this complicated setup where we're going to have the engines separate. They'll be protected by heat shields. And then we'll catch it. They'll come back to Earth and we'll catch them with a helicopter as they come down. On parachutes. Now, that last part is not ridiculous. That's been done before, so that's not unreasonable. But the complexity of separating the engines from the stage and then having to reinstall them on a new first stage, which means you're not getting full reusability of the stage, I think in the end puts them at a disadvantage in this competitive market. And I don't know how they can reduce costs significantly by doing that complicated approach. And so I wonder about that. I also wonder whether or not Boeing and Lockheed, the corporate boards of both those companies, are going to want to stick with ULA all the way down the road. You know, Boeing owns the Atlas V.
Right.
But they could, you know, at some point, I don't know, legally I don't know what the rules are here, but at some point they might decide, let's go it alone. Why should we be partners with Lockheed Martin, give them a share of this? So that's an unknown. I don't know what's going to happen there. ULA itself has been winning contracts, but it now has to compete with SpaceX. For example, the Air Force announced they were going to do combine 5 launches into a single bid contract, and they're putting it out for competition, and both SpaceX and ULA can compete for it. And the question I had on my website was, well, gee, that sounds like that's trying to create a situation that's going to favor one company or the other. And I thought at first it was favoring ULA. I had a lot of good commenters on my website saying, no, no, it actually favors SpaceX. So I don't really know who it favors. Maybe it doesn't favor either. But it, without question, ULA is under pressure to win those contracts. At some point when the Falcon Heavy is launching, SpaceX, as I mentioned already, SpaceX is going to have the ability to compete on all levels with ULA. Right now, ULA has an advantage with its Delta Heavy and its rockets. It can launch larger payloads into geosynchronous orbit than the Falcon 9 can. And so there's certain payloads that SpaceX just cannot compete with. Once they have a Falcon Heavy, they will be able to compete, and they will be able to undercut ULA's prices. And so, you know, I don't know what's going to happen with ULA. Same thing with Ariane Space. We could talk about that. You know, they've completely reshaped the company now. Airbus, Safran, and Ariane Space, they formed a new named corporation called Ariane Group. But basically, the private people, Airbus, Safran, that joint operation, they run the show now. It's not the European Space Agency. It's the private company that's running the show that has the stock majority. And they're trying to build a new rocket, an Ariane 6 rocket, that they say is going to cut that cost as much as 50% to 75%. It doesn't have reusability in it, though. And once again, I wonder if that lower cost can match what SpaceX is now demonstrating it can do. They have a challenge. There's no question of that. The Russians are big problems. I really wish the Russians would get their act together, but some people on my website think I really hate the Russians. I don't. I'd love them to succeed, but I also look at them very coldly at what's going on, and they have a very serious corruption, quality control problem throughout their entire aerospace industry, and maybe throughout the whole society. They don't have, for example, they just this week arrested another manager who was taking bribes and embezzling money during the construction of the Vostochny spaceport. And this is not the first, this is like the fourth or sixth person to be arrested. You know, they were taking so much money illegally that for a period of time the workers couldn't get warm being paid. And that project is, you know, very badly delayed and over budget. They announced that they're going to build a heavy lift rocket to compete with SpaceX and everybody else, and it will be prepared to launch by 2027, a decade from now. It's going to take them a decade to build. This is the heavy lift version of the Angara. It's going to take them a decade. Well, that's ridiculous. You can't compete with that kind of pace in this modern world right now. It's just not realistic. By the time they build that, it'll be old technology and it will not compete. And that slowness reminds me of the SLS Orion, and it's a government project because everything in Russia is government now. Where your goal really isn't to build anything. Your goal is to have a ongoing government project that brings money in to pay for the people who are on the payroll. And that's the only real goal. Whether you build anything or not is not really important. And that's why SLS is going to take between 15 and 20 years to do a single manned flight. And it's going to cost $40+ billion to do it. And that's kind of what I see happening in Russia. So they got serious problems there, and so I don't know what's going to happen. The Proton itself is not competitive in the long run. They have low labor costs, but those low labor costs mean that they're not attracting new engineers to their industry, the space industry. So they got problems, so I don't know where they're going to come. The big competition, once again, is the new companies coming up, those young people you talked about, and, you know, Blue Origin and some other companies that are just on the horizon now.
Anatoly Zak is our Hotel Mars guest tomorrow about the Russian situation again. So we'll see what he has to say for it, although he always seems to put a nice flip to whatever is going on.
He's Russian, at least he's pro-Russian, and I don't blame him for that. He should be. And so he's trying to always see the silver lining within the cloud. And the silver lining could eventually take over the cloud if you focus on it and work hard on it. And there is effort in Russia to do that. But they got a lot of clouds to clear up.
Yeah, and he tells it as it is. He's a good source of information. So it'll be good to talk with him again. What do you see with any of the satellite stuff going on? Do you see OneWeb or the SpaceX efforts, or where do you see satellite clusters and groupings and launches and changes coming? Anything?
You know, what's going on is that there is suddenly gigantic amount of investment capital available for satellite commercial endeavors that didn't exist before. And the reason that money exists is because the cost to get into orbit has gone down. That is also, it's not entirely that, though. The other component is the revolution that's going on within the satellite industry, the movement towards smaller satellites capable of doing the same things that big satellites once could do, and the movement towards doing a lot of these small, tiny satellites and have them accomplish what the big ones used to do. Those small satellites give a great deal of flexibility, and they cost less, and they can be built on assembly line. OneWeb makes a big deal about how they're building their satellites, not by hand, but they're going to do it like almost an assembly line, churn them out one per week, which is really the right way to do it. And so what you're seeing is that revolution in the industry, which is changing how space communications industry and any space orbiting technology is used on Earth. It's changing things, and you know, so everything's kind of fitting together. That's one of the reasons you're seeing these small rocket companies appearing, like Rocket Lab and Vector, because there is Launcher One, Virgin Orbit's rocket, which I think for sure is going to fly before Spaceship Two ever gets into space, and Launcher One has a contract with OneWeb, and they're going to fly. And so you get this. You asked me about the satellites, but it's all of a piece. It all goes together. The boom in the launch industry helps create a boom in the satellite industry. The boom and the technology revolution in the satellite industry helps feed the launch industry, and they're both working together to create this revolution. So the next decade is going to be really pretty wild when it comes to space. As the money grows in space and there's profits in space, then they can take risks and do more daring things in space that have nothing to do with communication satellites or GPS or Earth observation. They can start doing things like tourism and other kind of things.
You have your first email, and listeners, you can email it. It is a discussion with you, too. So email is drspace@thespaceshow.com, and the phone number is 866-687-7223. Certainly don't let our conversation deter you from calling or emailing in. Jerry is in Denver, and he says, Bob, your thoughts on the proposal that seems to be gaining some traction for a space guard?
Oh, that's a joke. That's personally it's a total joke. I kind of like laughed and said this is a joke, and I didn't even pay attention to it, but I've had it brought up by one other person, and now Jerry's brought it up. So I think I need to do a post on Behind the Black on this, because I think maybe I'll write an op-ed on it, because it's an absolute joke. You don't have a military force if you've got no military threat that a force is needed to defend against. And there's nothing in there in space. You have a space force of military people who, what will they do? They'll stand around and they'll do press conferences.
Well, I think you have a misunderstanding, because I've done shows with the authors of the latest iteration.
Maybe so. I have not looked at it, because what I have seen, what little I've seen, says that this is silly. So tell me where I'm wrong. I want to know.
Coyote Smith, who is a retired Air Force colonel, was the last and the most recent person to come on the show talking about it. And so the latest version is a little different than before. But they believe that commercial space is evolving to the point that in order to assure that commercial space and its assets are not tampered with, bothered with, screwed with, used in some nefarious way or something, they want to have a Coast Guard for space, or a space guard for doing that, plus for passenger flights when they become more prolific. They're not even close to prolific at this point, obviously. And it's not so much, as I understand it, to have the military in space, but to make sure that space remains commercially viable and and can make sure that assets that are commercial are actually protected and kept free and not screwed or tampered with.
It's an interesting thing, you know, the op-ed I'm going to have, that's a very interesting
thing. I'll send you his show link.
Yeah, please do.
The
op-ed I have in the Federalist tomorrow makes the point that it appears to me right now that the legal powers that be worldwide are afraid to fix the outer space treaty. They're trying to find some way to work around the problem without actually dealing with it. And the result is that sovereignty and private property and borders are given in human society. And if you don't have good borders, legally defined in some manner, and sovereignty, people will establish it anyway by force. And so what a space guard, the way you just described it, it's a response to the fact that we won't have a strong, clear legal framework in space, and so we're going to have to defend ourselves by force. If we have, like, say, a mining operation on the moon, we can't claim the territory, the Chinese want to move in, well, gee, we don't have a legal way to do it, and no one, not agreed deal between the nations, and so what happens then? Then it becomes Wild West, you use a gun. And so it's a response to, to me, that's a direct response to the lack of a legal framework in space for private enterprise and sovereignty. And it's actually not a mistake if we don't get the framework working. If 15 years down the road there's a lot of private enterprise in space and the Chinese are showing up and you are, the United Arab Emirates are showing up or Russia is showing up and they're trying to grab what we've already taken, yes, we're going to need a space force.
And it's also for deep space mining assets and in-situ resource utilization. I sent you the link to the show for March.
I will look at it.
So check it out. And that's the latest iteration that people are talking about. And Coyote is the author of the latest interaction, the latest version. It's going to be one of those nights. So what you hear is what is being talked about, minus whatever other people want to change or modify.
Right.
You know as well as I do, is limitless in our country.
Well, I mean, you know, there's the political framework and the Balkan framework, which always says, oh, this is a way we can create jobs in our district and then win votes, and that has nothing to do with reality or getting anything accomplished. It does sound to me like the iteration you described is shaping itself based upon what we talked about earlier, the going viral nature of the legal framework.
Yeah, as I recall, that is one of the takes I got from it. Send me the links to your Federalist article on Thursday, and I'll post it on the blog.
I will put it up. It will be up first thing. As soon as they get it up, in fact, I'll even go now and look to see if it could. It's supposed to go up tomorrow, but I will take it. You know, they don't necessarily tell me when it goes
up. So you're going to post it on Behind the Block?
Oh, absolutely. It will go up immediately. As soon as I know, I will put it up on Behind the Black, a link to it, and even maybe, you know, add some little discussion as well. And I'm very interested in reading the Space Guard. If that is the take, David, because I'm going to keep writing about this stuff for people like the Federalist and others, National Interest I've written for and others, about this subject, because I think this is, you know, when you and I have been talking for a decade about private space is the way to go. Well, private space is proving it's the way to go right now, so then what's the next stage? And that's where I think the lack of a legal framework in space is the big obstacle down the road that needs to be addressed. And I'm trying to get ahead of the game, ahead of the curve, and trying to direct the conversation. I can't do this, of course, but I'm trying to at least have some influence on the conversation to work in the right direction, you know, so we can help private space and individual freedom succeed in outer space. I really would like future settlers in space, please quote me on this, to be as free and as having the greater possibility of following their dreams as Americans have had for the last 250 years.
I have a question for you from Sandy in Boston by email, and then we'll probably take a break. And you'll love this question. Sandy says, Bob, I frequently go to your website, Behind the Black. I'm really curious, what prompts you to put music, operas, and other cultural things from the past and historic TV shows on your blog?
Well, for one, what she's referring to is something I call the evening pause, which goes on every night during the weekdays at around, what is it? In the evening, it depends on where you live, what time that's coming up. But, and 90% of those cultural videos are actually chosen by readers. They send me suggestions and I post them. And I'm always welcome to more suggestions. People email me the suggestions and then I schedule them. But for three and a half years of the website, I posted them all, and they were things that interested me. And my idea is to have some break from politics and break from space, something entertaining and enjoyable to watch that has a certain extra air of creativity and beauty and interest, and sometimes a little bit more depth that is a little bit beyond just simply talking about politics or space. And so that's the goal of it. And the people who send me suggestions, I accept about 80% of them, but you're not guaranteed to get it on because I have a certain standard and I'm looking for certain kinds of things and a variety, you know, something entertaining to get people's interest. I mean, you know, I want people to come to the website, and this is a, you know, variety is a good way to do it. But it's also to take a break from other stuff and get a sense of there's a wider cultural world out there. You know, Asimov once wrote one of his nonfiction essays, Analog. He once pointed out that engineers and scientists tend to be much more interested in liberal arts. A wider range of liberal arts, in his mind, from what he saw, than liberal arts literature people who are focused on their particular literature field, but not anything else. They don't not interested in engineering for sure. As a general rule, these are generalizations. Well, engineers tend to want to see things outside of just engineering. You want to have a wider view, and I think you need the wider view to really have some wisdom. If you don't have it, you lose sight of what's important, and so. To answer Andy's questions, that's the idea, and I hope she enjoys the variety of stuff that goes on the website.
One that I hope shows up soon. I think it's too early. One of my favorite
Wait! Don't say it.
What?
As I say this to my commentators, if you're going to make a suggestion for an evening pause, email it to me, and I'll schedule it. If you tell me about it now, I'm not going to schedule it because you've given it away.
So one of the criteria of the evening pause is it needs to be a surprise.
That's right. People send them to, whenever I ask on the evening pause, if you got any suggestions, say in a comment that you got a suggestion. I will email you, and then you can email me the suggestion.
Right.
I don't want people to give the suggestion in a comment, because then what's the point of scheduling it? Then it's there for everyone to see. No, I want to be able to schedule it. So, no, if you got an idea, David, whenever you got an idea, sure, tell me.
I don't think it's out yet, but I'll send it to you.
Okay, very good.
And I won't mention it on the air. But,
okay.
I think it'll be a lot of fun when it's available. We're going to take a pause for I'm having a trouble tonight for our midway point. It's just been one of those glorious weeks. So listeners, we'll be back hopefully with your phone calls. Come on, Marshall, where are you, John?
Where's all the regulars?
Yeah, where are you guys tonight? Are you? I don't know. Are you so caught up in whatever? I know what it is. It's the All-Star Baseball game, maybe.
Is that going on tonight?
Yeah.
That shows how out of touch I've gotten from sports.
And actually, Arizona, which is represented by you in Tucson, although it's up in Phoenix, is actually doing pretty well in the Western Division.
Oh, are they? I used to be a very big baseball fan, but I am so totally out of touch with that now. It's almost ludicrous.
So it is tied 1-1 in the top of the ninth with the American League and the National League.
Oh, wow.
And
okay. My heart beats still.
They both have 7 hits, too. So, listeners, that's where everybody is. They're in a nail biter with the All-Star game, right? Yeah. We'll be back in 3 minutes, everybody. Don't go anywhere. And the telephone number 1-866-687-7223. Email remains drspace drspace@thespaceshow.com.
The Space Show thanks its listeners for their generous support. The Space Show now joins forces with the One Giant Leap Foundation to further advance space education and the establishment of a spacefaring society and culture in America and the world. One Giant Leap Foundation is a tax-exempt organization with the purpose of advancing space education and development along with the Space Show. Your support of the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation helps get the word out as to why space is so essential and important to us all. So join with us by going to www.thespaceshow.com and clicking on the Support the Space Show button. Your contribution will help the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation in continuing its work and bringing you the programming you want free of charge on a continued basis. And remember, your gift to the Space Show is tax deductible.
The mission of the Space Show is to promote future economic opportunities, scientific discoveries, and medical advances for all humankind through peaceful and cooperative ventures in outer space. The Space Show intends to be the forum by which space exploration becomes an integral part of our culture, our economy, our country, our world, and our global vision, in which all nations unite in creating a thriving future through the enormous potentials afforded by off-Earth opportunities. The Space Show is committed to advancing integrity and responsibility, both in our off-Earth conduct and in the potential long-range consequences of our actions in space. The Space Show wants to make the dreams of space...
And welcome back, everybody, part two of the Space Show. And I'm working on eliminating CD disc from the show, listeners, which is why I haven't made new CDs. I'm wanting to play directly from the MP3 files into the mix, and if we can get that set up, that'll happen by Friday, and I'm going to quit playing with CDs. It's a pain in the ass, and they never work after two or three times. Anyway, welcome back to part two. Bob Zimmerman is our guest tonight. The toll-free number is 1-866-687-7223. Email drspace, drspace at thespaceshow.com. Tell us what's on your mind and what you want to know about the space industry. Our sponsors for the second part of our program, Orbital ATK, is a global leader in aerospace and defense technologies, and they are the partner you can count on for advanced, reliable space propulsion systems for space exploration, commercial ventures, and defense programs. And AIAA is also a sponsor. They are the world's largest aerospace professional society, the American Institute of Aeronautics and Astronautics. And they have over 30,000 individual members. They're representative of 88 countries, 95 corporate members. And these people are all busy shaping aerospace every day. Check them out at their website, AIAA.org. And again, if you're going to be in Orlando for Space 2017 in, I think it's around September 10th or 11th, let me know. And I look forward to meeting you there. Check out Bob's BehindTheBlack.com website. He's had the website for 7 years. It just feels like he had the website yesterday is when he started. Time goes really, really fast. And he's got a message there for birthday support. If you use Behind the Black and you like it, you might want to help keep the website going. So check it out. It's up at the top of Behind the Black, and you'll see his message to all of you. And as I say to all of you who listen to the Space Show, and the message is the same for those of you going to Behind the Black, don't be a freeloader, because it costs Bob and it costs the Space Show a lot of time and money to do this. So if you like it, if you benefit from what we do, and by the way, there are others that do things that are very high quality as well, support us. It's kind of like the starving artist appeal, Bob.
Well, we are in some ways.
We are.
I've been a starving artist my entire life.
But
what can I say?
The truth is that it costs money to run the Space Show.
Yeah.
It costs money to do Behind the Black and to do the kind of article writing and stuff. I know how much time it takes to archive a show, and Bob is putting up numerous articles per day. So support us if you like us, and don't just be a taker. Give back to us, and we will continue to give to you. Hopefully give to you value that you like. So comment on that to Bob, or comment on that to me, or both of us. Bob, I've got a surprise for you.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. You mentioned earlier rocket plane Kistler. You're going to maybe laugh at this.
Yeah.
So drop Kistler from the equation.
Rocket plane.
And rocket plane has reformed. I told you you were going to laugh. As a new Oklahoma corporation, LLC, as of April of this year. And if you go to rocketplane.com, you will see all of the information about their new participants, what they're doing, their new people, the advisors, all of this kind of stuff.
Is it rocketplane.com?
Yeah, I think
it's I'm on that website right now. It looks the same as it's looked for like decades.
Yeah, it does. But they'll tell you that it's been reincorporated.
Yeah, it says here, April 2017, Rocket Plane Global incorporates in Delaware. I moved from Wisconsin to is designed to allow better investment opportunity. That's interesting. They sign up 100 satellite launches by 2022 with two telecommunications.
Oh, yeah, right. And then it goes to About Us. And they've got the board of directors. So George French is back.
All right.
Okay, you've got John Brugner. I don't know John, or if I do, I don't remember him. Chuck Lauer is a friend. I saw Chuck at the Space Symposium. So he's been with Rocket Plane from day one. There are other advisors and people with them, too, that you would recognize. Let's see. I can't find that page.
I'm looking at the page. Their directors. I see George French. I see John Budgina.
Yeah, that's
and
what I
And then Chuck Lauer. Yes.
Yeah. So and they have a new mission statement. And so I contacted Chuck and George, who I know fairly well from past
yeah.
Space Show programs, and asked them to come back on the show. I'm still waiting for a reply. But I was stunned to know that this was.
Now you mentioned this about 2 months ago. I was going through my bookmarks and cleaning things up, and I actually went to this particular bookmark section and was going through all the X companies from a decade and a half ago and eliminating them that were gone. And I get to Rocket Plane Global, this webpage, and I see this. I actually did see this a few months ago, and I did exactly what I did when you mentioned it. I had forgotten this, but I laughed. I said, well, we'll have to see. And so I haven't reported this on Behind the Black because, you know, me, I intend to be a tough customer. I want to see some results. And they have a past history that is unfortunate, and I wish they had succeeded, like I always do. I want people to succeed, but that past means they're going to have to do something to convince me they're going places.
That's well, yeah, and what is their vehicle and all sorts of things. Anyway, I've been trying to see if I can get them back on the space show, Chuck and George, and if I do, I'll let the listeners know.
Oh, yeah.
I'm very interested in following up, and that was news to me. When a listener sent me this information, I almost died.
You know, once again, this is getting back to what we said earlier. There is the revolution in satellite industry is changing the approach to the space industry. And so here you've got they have some capital assets of some kind, maybe not physical assets, but they have intellectual properties that have some value in the designs. And if they can reshape those designs to be a cheap way to get satellites in small sats into orbit, that puts them in that rocket lab vector community. And there's a lot of companies that want to get a piece of the pie of the thousands of small sats that are going to be launched. And so maybe that's where they're going. It means maybe there also was investment capital available to them that they took advantage of in the positive way to get the company going again. Let's hope.
One can hope. Todd is in San Diego, and he says, Bob, will or will it not ever happen, the National Space Advisory Council?
Wait, I'm sorry. I missed the beginning of the question.
Will or will it not ever happen, the National Space Advisory Council?
You mean the one that they've authorized that Pence is the head of?
Yes.
I mean, it's happening. There's no question it's happening. Pence says he hopes to have it put together and happening by the end of the summer. And there's no question it's going to happen. It's been put into legal framework. It exists. That question isn't whether it'll happen. The question is whether it'll have any influence. I think it'll have influence. Will it have positive influence? That's the unknown right now because, you know, Eric Berger had a really interesting article on Ars Technica where he looked at the people who have been, that the Trump and Pence have been surrounding themselves with when they, in the ceremonies of these events, when they signed the authorization bill that recreated the National Space Council. Berger noted that they were surrounded by the big space people from Boeing, Lockheed, and other of those big companies.
There was no one from the traditional ones.
And then my response and his response to Pence's speech in Florida was a lot of pablum and not very much substance. And it sounded like they were pushing the same kind of big space government goals that didn't get us anywhere for decades. And so that tells you, well, gee, maybe the Space Council is going to have a lot of those people on it. Well, then I saw a very interesting analysis by Doug Messier looking at what Pence actually said, and he did note something really interesting, that Pence made a lot of references to commercial space achievements, very little reference to the Space Launch System and Orion. And so that's interesting. One of the things I noted, I was very disappointed, I wasn't surprised, but I was disappointed nonetheless at the lack of any details or substance in Pence's speech. But then again, the Trump administration has had a very interesting modus operandi that they have followed pretty consistently, is that when they're going to do something that requires, that's going to hurt some big, powerful people, what they do before they do it is they soft-pedal those people. They stroke them nicely. They have meetings with them. They make it sound like they're going to be on their side all the way. And then, out of the blue, they hit them hard. They did this with the environmental movement. I mean, remember Trump met with Gore, and Gore came away very satisfied. And Trump did similar kind of meetings with that. But then when the budgets came out and their proposals for EPA and for NASA and NOAA, they were hitting the environmental movement very hard, especially in the areas where they needed to get hit hard. I mean, I actually think some of those suggestions by the Trump administration made sense, but they politically handled it in that manner. Well, it could be that they're soft-pedaling the situation right now, and they're going to use the National Space Council to diffuse their potential enemies here, give them a seat on the table, and then they'll talk a lot, but when the actual policies get made, the talking will be irrelevant.
Do you know who's going to be on it?
No one knows who's going to be on it right now. There's been hints. There's a lot of Soviet style. Well, he was sitting next to him, so he'll be on it. But we really don't know at this point. There has been no hints. I know I haven't gotten any calls. Neither of you, I'm sure. And I doubt we will either. You know, this is going to be a tool, a political tool by the Trump administration to get certain people on their sides that might be waffling. You give them a seat on this council, it's a political plum, and then you can then use that to convince them to be on your side. And that's, I think, how they're using it. So we'll see. We'll have to wait and see.
And we also don't have a NASA administrator, although I have been told that it has been selected but not announced. But I don't know who. I was told who it was between, and that one has been selected, but I don't know who the one was, and I don't know whether.
You know, I was on WCCO last night for an hour talking about a lot of this stuff, and the one thing we all must recognize about the Trump administration right now is though it appears the administration is interested in space, as all presidents are because of the political bonuses you get for it, public relations-wise. The Trump administration very clearly considers NASA and space, especially NASA, the bureaucracy part of space, a lower priority. And so, and every administration, new administration, does not name the NASA, has not, for the last two decades, it's been at least a year before you see a new NASA administrator. I don't think that NASA is a high priority. They have much more difficult fish to fry on international relations, North Korea, issues in the Middle East. You know, there's a lot of terrorism. There's a lot of other political issues that are far more important. The nation's economy. You know, space could help that. It's still a minor component of that. And so I'm not surprised there hasn't been a NASA administrator picked. The fact is that NASA and the space industry, if you just don't change anything right now, things are moving in the right direction, and they can just let it float for a while in the positive direction it's going.
They're acting administrator is Robert Lightfoot, and he's doing a pretty good job from what I hear.
So. He's just basically keeping the ball rolling, and he's also he's doing what all good administrators do, no matter who they are. He is trying to do what the present administration wants done, and he's being supportive of what they want done. And you know, he's hoping. Well, maybe they'll just pick me because
he is one of the top people I've heard talk about over time.
Yeah, and that doesn't surprise.
And I met him at the symposium. And, you know, what can you say about a 30-second encounter? But I thought he was a very friendly, supportive, nice guy. But he's there to be at the pleasure of the president.
That's right.
So
who knows?
You know, you can be really on the market like Bob, like the last two were Griffin and what's his name with Obama?
Bolden.
Or you can be more of a maverick and try to go it alone a little bit. But you're there at the pleasure of the president.
That's right. You know, you don't become a deputy administrator at a place like NASA, especially a guy who wasn't an astronaut.
By being a maverick
and not knowing how to play the political game.
Oh, no, you're steeped in that culture.
That's right. And he's going to know how to do it, and he's doing it. And so what will happen down the road, who knows? I don't really think the pick of the NASA administrator is really that significant. I don't think it can be. I mean, with Mike Griffin, it made a significant difference. With Sean O'Keefe, it made a significant negative difference. With Charles Bolden, I think his underlings were more important to the whole process. Lori Garver and others, I think, were significant. And the fact that George Bush had already imposed commercial space cargo on the Obama administration before the administration even took power, and they just went with that because some of the people in that administration thought it was a good idea, and they pushed it. So who knows? We'll see what goes. Right now, I don't think space is a high priority with the Trump administration, and I think that's perfectly reasonable.
I have another question for you. June is in Seattle, and June says, I was at the National Space Society ISDC meeting. I didn't see you, so I'm not sure if you attended. Anyway, the director of the ESA was there, and he made a keynote about the European lunar city or lunar village that they want to do. But the interesting thing in his keynote was that he referenced that, although not right now, because it wasn't necessary right now, but to do the lunar village and to do other advanced things, they're going to have to take a look at the legal structure in the outer space treaty.
Well, that's really good to know, June.
And
I hadn't known he had mentioned that.
And that's the ESA director.
Once again, that confirms what I've been saying, that it's beginning to get viral here. They all recognize the problem. The lunar city or village that ESA wants to build is a joke. And this is part of among the international space agencies of the world. This is NASA, this is Roscosmos, this is JAXA in Russia, and ESA. They are getting together to try to put together a package to build a lunar city and a space station around the moon, and they're working with big companies like Boeing and Lockheed and Orbital ATK to build this giant, you know, ISS around the moon, essentially. And that's what they've been putting together and lobbying for internationally, the next major international cooperation project. And ESA loves this lunar base idea, lunar village. That's wonderful, except it's going to cost them 10 times as much and take 10 times as long. While they're taking 10 times as much and 10 times as long, Blue Origin and SpaceX very much might build their colony and take over all the territory and tell them you can't come in. Yeah, you know, we'll see what happens.
I don't think it's going to fly, but a lot of things could happen. You never know.
Well, you know, once again, they have legal power. These are the governments.
Right.
And they could impose their will. Remember, it was during the Nixon-Carter period when the space shuttle was being created that they imposed the rule on the United States, a capitalist free nation, no one questioned this, that no private launches could take place. All satellites had to be launched on NASA's space shuttle.
Yeah, how'd that work out?
And that didn't work out well, but they imposed that. And so
The
nations of the world and their space agencies want to say, no, we don't want anyone else doing this, we want it done by us, they might be able to inform that.
And that allowed Ariane to become the most commercially successful rocket in the world.
Well, no, it maybe not the most successful rocket in the world. Maybe the
commercial
capture 50% of the commercial industry market while losing money.
Oh, they always lost money. They never made a profit ever.
Never made a profit. But they did dominate the industry. There's no question of that for two decades. And we never did because our launch industry was destroyed by the government in the 1970s. Literally destroyed. It's really unfortunate. So, all right. Anyway.
So,
any other calls?
No calls. So let me throw out the phone number again. The ball game is still going on, so maybe they're still listening. 1-866-687-7223. And Bob wants to talk to you, so don't shun him. He hasn't done anything evil cause you to boycott Bob Zimmerman tonight. Email continues drspace, drspace at thespaceshow.com. This is your night for softballs. Sarah's in Phoenix, and she says, Bob, do you ever go to space conferences? Can we ever see you someplace?
Well, that's interesting. That's a tie-in to June's question previously of whether I was on
ISDC.
I don't go to a lot of space conferences. I won't deny that. I'm not a hermit, but I don't go to a lot of these because I have in the past, and I find myself frustrated because there's a lot of talk, but it's not really reality. And I find, you know, there's plenty of good reporting by people who were there to tell me if anything really important happens. And I grant you, you get a deeper understanding if you're actually there. I don't deny that. But I find myself generally not unsatisfied when I go to these. I wrote a piece, if you do a search on Behind the Black, too, for the AIAA. There was a weekend where I had a choice between going to a new space conference. You had invited me and others had mentioned it. It was in California. Or going to give a lecture at an AIAA engineering conference for students. And so I went to the engineering conference, gave my lecture, but I was at this conference. And it had nothing to do with new space and the next step. But in the process, I found out what was really going on, I think, in the industry itself. This is another example of how I think the industry and the future looks towards private space and not to big space. That even the AIAA, these people there were pushing for commercial space and not SLS and big space. And that was the case. It wasn't one of these new space conferences like NSS conferences. It was a bunch of engineers talking about engineering concepts. Aerospace engineering concepts, much more engineering focused and, you know, hands on. And I found that much more interesting. So no, I don't, you know, you want to meet me, you know, I'm always willing to lecture. I do lots and lots of lectures periodically. In fact, I was invited. I'm going to be flown out. My wife and I are going to be flown out actually to the Bahamas next January to give a lecture for a resort there. They asked if I would be giving a lecture on space, and I said, sure, I'd love to. And, you know, they're going to fly us out, so I can't complain about that. So if people want to hear me talk, I'd be glad to give lectures. I almost never say no. That's why I'm on the radio all the time.
Where in the Bahamas are you going?
Hey, this is Nassau, Bahamas.
Oh, cool.
It was very interesting. I get this email. It's one of the major resorts there. They have a lecture series they provide for their guests, and the woman who emailed me is a fan of the John Batchelor Show, and she said, oh, I like listening to you, and I hear you do this, and would you be willing to come and give us a lecture on space? And I said, sure, I'd love to. And so I'm going out at Nassau, Bahamas. It was interesting when I got the email because one of my last movies when I was in the movie business was a film I produced that took place in Nassau, Bahamas at a resort that no longer exists there, actually, I found out. The Crystal Palace, Carnival Crystal Palace. They gave us facilities. We shot on one of their carnival boats. And so I asked the person who emailed me, and she said, well, that doesn't exist anymore. And so it'll be kind of cool to go back there for the weekend and do some snorkeling and just sightsee and then give a lecture.
Jack is in Denver with an email, and this may be one of your only no-telephone shows unless somebody gets off their butt and gives us a call. Jack says, Bob, you hardly ever talk about the space settlement movement. Do you think the time is now to be pushing for space settlement? Do you think it's off in the distance, or does it not interest you that much?
Well, actually, the writing I've been doing and the talking I've been doing recently on the issues of the Outer Space Treaty are directly related to space settlement. It directly related to it, because you can't have settlement if you can't own the property you settle. And that's, I think, a problem that the space settlement, any future space settlement movement's got right now, because they will not be able to own the land they settle. And I think it's going to put a hindrance on any of that possibility. I think any space settlement movement right now, talking about the engineering of such, there's nothing wrong with doing that, but I think it's a little premature. A little, not a lot. Event. It's going to happen. It's going to happen soon. But things like Elon Musk's interplanetary transport concepts, a lot of that was fantasy land. He has no concept what it's like to build an interplanetary spaceship. It was very clear from his own video. And so I'm focused on what the fundamental problem right now is, space settlement. You want to mine something on the moon, which is going to make it possible to create a settlement there. Well, how do you own your mine? You can't. You just literally can't own your mine, because no laws of any nation can be applied. It's the UN's laws, and the UN doesn't have any laws in this respect. You can't establish property lines. You can't establish borders. So, you know, you want to claim a mine, where does your property start and end? If you found a good location, let's say where there's ice and one of those lunar craters, and China comes along and they want to grab some of the territory too, how do you, define where your property line is? So the settlement movement has got to have a legal framework to work off. One of the things that inspired this writing I'm doing recently is that I was thinking about what made the settlement of the American West work so well. And the U.S. had a very good legal framework for establishing territories, cities, villages, counties, and then eventually those territories became states. But the legal framework was only there to establish a foundation to allow the citizens to do the settling. The government did no settling really at all. It left it up to the citizens of the country. Telegraph lines put in, or if it wanted railroads, it bought the product from American citizens to have, or companies to have it built. And so I think that is a framework we should think of down the road. And we don't have a legal framework established in space yet, and what we do have forbids it. And that is really a terrible situation, and we need to fix that.
So your capitalism paper, property rights, these are all precursors in your mind to the settlement movement.
Absolutely. You can't do anything without individual property rights, without the ability to have a secure contractual rights to what you do to your labor. This is going back to John Locke and Adam Smith and some of the philosophical bases that established the British Empire and the American nation, and what made us wealthy.
What about the legal concept that a lot of people talk about, is that, okay, you don't have the actual property right, but you do get to work your claim and get your profits and your benefits from it.
That's nice, but, that means what you're getting is you're getting mineral rights for a piece of property.
Pretty much like an oil lease.
Yeah, it's a mineral right. Now, that can work in certain situations, but that's a very narrow look at the future and settlement. It's just saying, the miners can get their minerals, but what about the people that live there? What if you want to put in a store that's going to provide the supplies the miners need? What if you want to invest in entertainment for those miners? You can't, because you can't own the property. A settlement is not just a mine. It's the whole game of creating of society. And without the ability of the whole society to be able to buy its piece of land and have a legal framework to work off of, it's not going to happen. You will have a limited success. You just won't happen. You won't have good settlements. You'll start to have very corrupt, socially corrupt settlements, where it's much like the boomtowns that should accompany towns, for example. That's the best analogy, where no one really owns anything except the company. In this case, it would be the UN. And they rule the roost, and they dictate the terms, and your salary is decided by them. You don't own any of the homes you live in or the property you have, and you got to buy their food. You don't have any control. Where you allow property rights, you distribute the power to as many people as possible. Once again, and it creates competition, and it creates a thriving, healthy social framework. So yes, I think this is like fundamental, and I'm talking the fundamentals right now because the fundamentals don't exist. And so we want to settle the solar system. We've got to fix these legal fundamentals. I did a space law panel at an ISDC many years ago for the NSS. I was the runner of the panel, and I got some speakers. I got Mike Gold as a speaker. He was working for Bigelow at the time, and a few other people. And we had like two people come to watch. Talk about the fundamentals of the legal framework. They were all in another conference. They went to another panel that was talking about mining on the moon. Well, we're now a decade later, and we still haven't mined anything on the moon, and we still don't have the legal framework to do such a thing.
Well, it's a long road ahead, isn't it?
Oh, my gosh, yes. But, you know, David, going viral, as I said earlier, you and I I'm not the only one, you and other people have raised this issue about the Outer Space Treaty now for nigh on 25 years. Alan Wasser of the L5 Society from New York City, some people who know NSS history will know that name. He was pushing the legal need for changing the Outer Space Treaty 25 years ago. And couldn't get anyone interested in it.
I recently tried to get him back on the show because I know Alan.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
We had a long chat about it, and he's kind of stepped down and he's retired. And he said the problem is it doesn't go anywhere, so he didn't really want to go do it.
Yeah, and I understand why he says that, because for his life, it just no one was interested. But what I find most interesting, you know, I wrote that Federalist op-ed about 3 months ago, and within days of that, and I didn't know this was going to happen, but Ted Cruz has a hearing where he brings up the Outer Space Treaty. And I don't think he was inspired to do that because of my op-ed, but I just happened to beat him to the punch in print. But that he said it himself and that others are bringing this up means that maybe now is the time where we'll go somewhere. That now if we push hard and raise this issue repeatedly, we might have enough influence to change things. And that's at least where I'm coming from right now. At least I'm going to try. You know, Alan's older than I am, but not by much. And so,
No, by much. I think he's mid-70s.
Well, not by much.
20 years.
Unfortunate. No. Mid-70s is not 20 years, David.
I'm
not as young as you think.
Are you in your 60s yet?
I'm in my mid-60s, David.
Oh, well.
You know, I go caving and I do outdoor stuff, so I'm still in great shape. But, time I've got left, I'm going to push this. This is one of the things I'm going to push because I think this is the next issue. We spend the last 15 years pushing the idea of private.
A phone call, Bob. You have a phone call.
Oh, let's do it. I mean, you know, enough talking about the Outer Space Treaty, unless they want to talk about it.
Hello, caller. Welcome to the show. Who are you? Where are you? Thank you very much for calling, Bob. He was getting depressed.
This is John Fort Worth.
Yes. Oh, John, hello. How nice to meet you.
You're better than Prozac. Go for it.
Well, at any rate, on the issue of SpaceX and what ULA and everything, I think, though, that U.S. government the problem that's going to be formed here, SpaceX will be so cost competitive, they could become a monopoly.
No.
And the U.S. government doesn't want to rely on one supplier for critical defense needs, so I think they're going to have to keep something going domestically as an alternative to SpaceX.
You know, John, you're not wrong in that. The Air Force very much will not give all its contracts to SpaceX, even if they are competitive. But ULA as a company really will not be able to survive on just military contracts. It needs to be able to compete in the commercial market as well. One of the ways that company survived for the last decade is they had that really sweet EELV deal where literally the Air Force was giving them between $800 million and $1 billion a year just money. It was just a subsidy to keep them going. That's gone. They don't get that anymore. And so without that, they have to sell not just to the military. Now, the military wants multiple providers, launch providers, but I think SpaceX is not going to be a monopoly because there are other companies there that are going to try to compete with them and exist. Blue Origin is immediately comes to mind as the number one competitor for them, and they are, I think, with Bezos's deep pockets, he's got $1 billion a year. That's five times more than Elon Musk ever had in total. And this is per year he raises with selling a small amount of his Amazon shares. So he's got very deep pockets. He's not going to go expensive. He wants to be competitive, but he's basing his technology on the same ideas that SpaceX is, but he's building it from the beginning that way. So he might actually come up with a more efficient, better product that can launch cheaper than SpaceX. So I don't think it will be a monopoly. I also think that you're right, the Air Force is going to continue to give contracts to ULA. But in the end, if ULA wants to compete and survive, they're going to have to win commercial contracts. To do that, they're going to have to come up with a cheaper system of doing it.
But when is Blue Origin going to actually get something in orbit?
That's a good question. You know, they say by 2020, that's not unreasonable because right now they are doing tests on the BE-4 engine and they're building the factory. They've decided to build the factory in Alabama for the rocket engine and they have a rocket factory in Kennedy for building the rocket itself. And they're building those facilities. And so it looks, once you've got your rocket engine and you've got it reliable, building the rocket around it is, and this is a relative term, it's relatively simple. The engine's the heart. You got to build the engine first to make it work and know what it does. And so they're doing engine tests. They had an issue with the first engine tests. I haven't heard any word about if they've solved it and moved on. But they're doing those tests, and I think once that engine is certified and functional, they will move pretty quick. And I think that I think it's not unreasonable, 2020, 21, maybe 22 at the latest, they're going to have a launching vehicle that can compete. And so there might be a few years where SpaceX can dominate very strongly, but that's not going to be forever.
Well, that is an interesting question. But if they can do something similar. The other issue is ULA. I mean, at this point, I guess the question is, are they considering maybe going the same way SpaceX has gone with originally they didn't want to because they didn't believe it would work, but SpaceX has demonstrated recovery of first stages of their technique.
Yeah.
And it seems that, I mean, I'm kind of won over myself to that general concept.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean that SpaceX is the only one that can do it. It seems like everybody would probably start copying that unless there's a better way.
Well, that's a question I was talking about earlier in the show. They have chosen to go a different route because they said they didn't think vertical landing would work. For a big corporation like this to shift gears, to reject an idea they were sold on like 2 years ago and then go with a new idea is not an easy thing for a corporation to do. So, will they make a shift? You know, I have no idea. We can speculate, but that's just speculation. They might go with the plan they've got because maybe they have ideas that make it work better. Who knows? I'm not convinced. I don't think you are either. We're going to have to see. ULA's got its back to the wall here. I give credit to Tory Bruno for trying very, very hard and working and being somewhat successful. But in the long run, not the short, in the long run, they are their backs to the wall. In the short run, you're right, the Air Force will keep giving them contracts. In the short run, they will be competitive. But in the long run, by 2020, 2022, they're going to have a problem competing with new companies.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it just seems like, I mean, even the Falcon 9 wasn't originally supposed to land this way. It's been an evolution, you know.
Yeah. This is the advantage the Blue Origin has, by the way. They're building their rocket from the beginning with vertical landing capabilities. SpaceX improvised vertical landing as they went, and in some ways, you know, from an engineering perspective, it's much better to design your concept from the very beginning. So Blue Origin might very well have an advantage, significant advantage over SpaceX once they start operating because they've built it that way from the very beginning. you know, in a sense, ULA has the same advantage if they want to take it. They can, they're building the Vulcan from beginning now. If they want to be innovative from the beginning, they have a chance to do that. They've chosen a route that doesn't sound at first like it could be as effective or as cost effective. But we'll see. They might be right. Well, you know, I'm not going to say, I'm not an engineer, and they know their figures, so we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, well, that'd be interesting. I just, so the next idea, of course, is what about evolving the SLS?
I knew you were going to say it. I knew it.
Do what, John?
SLS ain't going to be evolved anywhere. And that part of the problem, John, with it is that no one owns it but NASA. Boeing makes certain parts. ATK, Orbital ATK makes other parts. Aerojet Rocketdyne makes other parts. But none of those companies are dominant. It is, the sum of the parts is NASA owned. And NASA is a government agency, and it's not designed in a way that you can evolve it in any way, shape, or form. And besides the point, it's taken them, what, 15 years to get to a point where they might launch one? You want to redesign it? I'll add another 15 years to the construction of this rocket because they can't really move very fast. So, no,
the
that's not
the only thing. We can speed them up a little bit.
You are living, if you really believe that, I have a bridge in Brooklyn I want to sell you. It's cheap. $500, you can own it. You walk across it. It gets a great view of the city. It's really cool.
You get a guarantee with it, Bob?
No, you have to buy it as is. But it had a renovation in 1988 that really was pretty good. They cleaned it. It's really good. It's called the Brooklyn.
Do you get to keep the tolls on it?
No tolls. No tolls allowed. Sorry. Can't.
Okay.
But you get to own it. You put your name on it. You know, it could be the John Bridge instead of the Brooklyn Bridge. Anyway, I'm sorry.
John from Fort Worth Bridge.
That's right. John from Fort Worth Bridge. Fort Worth Bridge. Boy, my Brooklyn roots tell me that ain't going to fly.
Anything else, John from Fort Worth?
I guess I'll be it for tonight. I'll see if somebody else.
So just to update you, I'm still waiting for a reply after the other John comes back from wherever he is. So I am on top of it, and we'll see what happens.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, John.
All right. Listeners, now that our one and only call is over with, the line is available. If somebody else is out there and wants to call in before we end our program, 1-866-687-7223. Email drspace@thespaceshow.com. And you have a note that came in from Eric before John called. This is your night for the wild card, let me tell you.
Okay.
Eric is in Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Okay.
And he says, Bob, I listen to most of your shows on the Space Show, and I also occasionally hear you on other radio shows, plus I read Behind the Black. You don't seem to talk about or say much about the space elevator. Do you think that's a non-starter, or what are your thoughts on that?
I am very skeptical of the engineering state of the idea right now. That's all there is to it. I'm just very skeptical. And, you know, I'm not an engineer, but I trust my instincts of engineering and economics and how things, and what the state of the industry and the technology is at the moment. And the elevator idea does not excite me in the slightest. Part of the way my mind kind of works is, and I'm not an investor, but gee, is this something I would invest in? And no, I would not. I wouldn't even be interested in the slightest. It just doesn't sell to me in the slightest. There are other things I would invest in. I mean, at least I'd say, yes, that's something people should invest in. That's going to go.
Does a lunar elevator have more excitement for you?
It has a slightly more technological advantage. You don't have an atmosphere to deal with and a lower gravity, but you also have an unstable gravitational field. You know, you cannot have anything orbiting around the moon and be in that permanent orbit. The orbit, because of the mascons under the surface, the denser areas, is an unstable field, so it's hard to have something in orbit, and so I wonder about how that would affect an elevator in that situation. Nonetheless, we're still back to the same point. I think it's jumping the gun. This is what I would call the terraforming Mars question. You know, I got this question on Coast to Coast many years ago after the Challenger accident. why can't we terraform Mars? And I said, we can't even put people in orbit right now. And you're talking about terraforming Mars. Let's focus on what we can do, what we need to do. And building an elevator, a space elevator on the moon, I think is jumping the gun. We have other fish to fry that have to be taken care of first.
Okay. Eric, probably not what you wanted to hear, but...
I don't know. He was just curious why I didn't say it.
If you... have a follow-up, fire it off before we close down for the evening.
Yeah.
What else should we be talking about? What else do you want to call to our attention that we have omitted or ignored so far?
Well, you know, I have a whole series of stories on China. A lot of stories, actually, recently on Behind the Black on a variety of international things going on, nothing new with the United States. You know, we talk about SpaceX all the time, but I've been talking about a bunch of other things. China. China had three stories that were really interesting this week. One, you know, they had a launch failure, their Long March 5 rocket. That's the rocket they're going to use to put their space station in orbit. It's the rocket they need to put through their lunar sample return mission later this year. It's the heart of their future space program, and on its second launch, it didn't function properly and didn't get its satellite in orbit. So they have that problem to solve. But meanwhile, they just began, and this is really interesting, they just began a 200-day simulated self-sufficient space station experiment on the ground. This is where four Chinese students are going to occupy this space station for 200 days. And the key about the station, they made a big deal in the article, is that it's designed to be self-sufficient. They're trying to recycle the air, the food, the water, the everything, oxygen within the station, you know, and they have a lot of, we have these technologies with ISS and so forth. You can build such a thing. But what's really struck me about that article that I think was very revealing, though it was only as an aside in the article and didn't really make it, everyone's assuming the space station experiment has to do with space stations and interplanetary travel, but they mentioned that they will also be testing to living for a period of time without sunlight. All right, and so that meant that for a period of time, then the time length was unstated, which I think is significant. The station and the people inside it will not have any access to sunlight. Well, what immediately came to my mind is, well, gee, if you put a build a lunar base, you're going to have to deal with 14 days without sunlight. And I've never heard of a space station. Russians have done these dozens of times. We've done a few Mars experiments like this. You know, Zubin's been involved in that, but I've never heard of anyone just saying, okay, the station is cut off from light for several weeks. And they don't say how long, but I suspect if we could find out, it would be 14 days. What this tells me is this is not an experiment to build a space station or a spaceship. This is an experiment to learn how to build a lunar base. And that is very, very interesting to me. It tells you something about how the Chinese are going. The Chinese also, there was an article I had on Behind the Black about how one of their industry people says they are about to build a sea launch type platform, similar to sea launch, whereby they can launch rockets from a platform that they will float on the ocean where you can put it where you need it to go. And they are hoping to do their first, have the service available to international users by 2018. And that they hope to have their first launches, test launches very, very soon. They're building this based on modifying, it says here, 10,000-ton freighters. So I don't know exactly how they're doing it, but they're trying to, it looks like, do it on the cheap. Keep it simple. That's an example of how China wants to compete for this space market very aggressively. And there's a lot of other stories in China. China is something really to watch. It's going to be the government model competing with the private model of the United States.
Very interesting. I wonder if they'll put it out near their South China Sea islands that they've created.
Oh, I thought of that as well. I definitely thought of that as well. But, you know, a seagoing platform to launch rockets, you don't put it in that particular place. You're basically going to pick latitude and longitude for the advantage of the customer, the satellite you're putting in orbit. That's the advantage that Sea Launch sold.
Right.
You know, you got the Russians trying to bring that company back as a private venture. I don't know if that's going to happen,
yeah.
Maybe, but here you got the Chinese stepping in and trying to compete as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, we talked about that last year, but I haven't heard any follow-ups on that.
The Russian thing, the situation with the Russians is they are it's embroiled with the Ukraine-Russian conflict.
Right, the legal
stuff. And that's still
stuff,
the case. The company president, it's a private Russian airline, He has the money. He wants to do some test launches from Baikonur, from Kazakhstan, using the Zenit Ukrainian rocket. And he has had problems getting approvals from both the Ukrainians and the Russians. Has delayed things because of the conflict. In the end, he wants to launch these Zenit rockets. Now, I saw a piece today. I didn't get a chance to read it. I just saw the headline and then got distracted and never clicked on it. I'm going to go back and look. But it appears they're going to try to adapt the Soyuz rocket for sea launch. So maybe that's how they're going to get around the Ukraine. Maybe they're now looking at the Soyuz as an alternative. It's a player in the game. It's a player trying to gain this booming coming satellite launch market. And it just makes the future really exciting in this.
Well, we're almost at the 2-hour point. So anything we should have talked about that we haven't, pearls of wisdom?
I have no pearls of wisdom. If I did, I'd be wealthy. But I do have, we haven't talked about science in the slightest. You know, like Juno did its close flyby of Jupiter and flew over the Great Red Spot yesterday. Pictures will be coming out shortly. I'm going to do a Mars update, I think, tomorrow. If people who read my website regularly, you'll know I do about once every few weeks, a month, I do a Mars rover update,
right,
updating on what the two rovers are doing. And they had a really a press release from NASA JPL on Curiosity today, and
and also Cassini's coming up on its grand
finale. Yes, and so it's been doing its grazing orbits of the rings.
So they
haven't released any pictures recently of those ring crossings, which is frustrating.
The next time you're on, we will do planetary missions up front, because there's a lot of stuff happening.
Oh, that sounds like a good idea. And I am scheduled again, if I remember correctly, for sometime in late September.
I don't know if you are.
Yeah, September 26th is my next appearance.
And then
I rescheduled it for you because of other conflicts. So then you're
not scheduled after that.
So you send me a list and I'll get a schedule. We'll put a schedule together, absolutely.
Now, there's a chance I could be stuck on a jury because I've jury duty on the 22nd. God help me if I'm stuck on a jury that goes that long, but there's no way to know, so.
Yes, well, you live in the fascist state of California, so you don't have as much freedom to decide these things.
Don't you have jury duty in Tucson?
Oh, yeah, I was called to, both me and my wife, actually, in the last 4 months were called to jury duty, and the way it works in Arizona is the day before you call. And in my, actually, for me, when I first got the date, I was going, the date I got, I was conflicted with another trip. So I called them up. They said, okay, we'll reschedule. You tell us the date you want to schedule it for.
No, I've done that 3 times this year. So I've used up my goodwill.
I rescheduled it, and then I called them the day before as per their instructions, and they told me we won't need you.
Yeah, I have that too. So I'm hoping that that's what happens when I call. But I've used up my 3 accommodations for the year.
Oh, really?
And so I'm September 21st or 2nd, whatever it is.
You have to go.
Well, or at least I have to call the night before.
Right.
I guess if I had a heart attack or something, they could still.
You could always get out for medical reasons. I'm sure of that.
Well,
my wife, she was almost on a jury, but they told her this trial might last 2 weeks. She said, well, I have a conference I have to go to 3 weeks hence. And they said, well, because there's a chance it might go long, you're dismissed. And she went home. So
you have a message from Burton Chan, and he's up in Montreal. And
okay.
So he says, a quiet note to Bob. I think he means a quiet note. Anyway, the Chinese Ocean Launch Platform is a CubeSat launch vehicle to LEO and SSO.
Well, then what you've got there is a direct competitor in the small sat industry to people like Vector and Rocket Lab.
What is SSO?
I don't know. That's a good question.
I wonder if he's got a typo there. LEO, MEO, GEO. What the hell is SSO? I don't know. Burton, if you're still listening, even
that sun synchronous orbit, that's what it is.
Okay.
Sun synchronous orbit. That's what
But these are CubeSats.
Well, so what? One of the problems CubeSats have had is, you know, they have to go ascend secondary payloads.
Right.
And they don't get the chance to pick their orbits so easily. You get a small sat rocket, you can pick your orbit. So a small sun synchronous polar orbit is one of the places a lot of CubeSats might want to be. And so that makes a great deal of sense.
Well, tell us if that's what you mean, Burton. I guess that's going to be it then for tonight. And I will, when I send you the archive information, I'll send you the rest of the dates for the year.
All right, then. Very good day.
And, so let's do planetary up front the next time you're on in September.
Yeah, that sounds good. Let's see, September, that should be after Cassini has met its end, so we can talk about that. And the rover and Curiosity at that point will have entered some very interesting terrain, so there'll be a lot of
Absolutely.
Stuff to talk about.
All right, and I'll get the archives to you in the morning. Listeners, those of you who emailed us in our one call, John from Fort Worth, thank you for calling. Everybody else, shame on you for not calling. Marshall, the rest of you, that's just unheard of, and go stand in the corner. What can I say? And
it means you have to work more, David. That's what it means.
And for those of you that actually cared about the All-Star game, the American League won it in the 10th inning 2-1. So good news to some and bad news to others. So, Bob, thank you for being with us tonight, and I'll look forward to talking to you in a couple of months and staying in touch as always.
Yes.
Remember, people, don't just take from Behind the Block or the Space Shows. Help support us. And you'll see Bob's message at the top of his page. And, of course, I always talk about it for the Space Show. And we appreciate your support. And thank you very much for doing that. Everybody have a terrific rest of the week. And, again, on Hotel Mars, Anatoly Zak is our guest. And then we have our Friday and our Sunday Space Show program, as always. Thank you all. Everyone, keep looking up and stay safe. Good night from Bob, good night from David, and good night from the Space Show.